welcome to the January 28, 2001 edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 2.5 hours of civil rights local talk with me. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Robert Norse. Bring me a bathrobe and a sleeping band protest sign and join me, and we'll try to end the laws that criminalize homeless people here in Santa Cruz and in cities across the state, indeed across the nation. But of course, since we live in Santa Cruz, this is our piece of the pie. This is our portion on the plate to deal with: the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, the Santa Cruz City blanket ban, the laws that criminalize homeless people here on our turf, here in Santa Cruz, here where we live, where we have to watch or turn away our eyes while people are denied basic human rights, and a city council elected to deal with those abuses remains silent and sullen as freezing weather adds to the trials and tribulations of homeless people outside. Call-in number for this show is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, that's Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course, broadcasting from Santa Cruz for the last nearly a decade, since 1995, actually, half a decade, certainly, without commercials, without censorship, and often without funds, but not without you, we hope. And if you want to be a part of this process of community dialogue, again, the phone number to call in is 427-3772 here at Free Radio. If you want to talk to my producer off the air to possibly arrange for a spot on the show, give us information that you don't want to go public with, or otherwise clarify something you've heard but don't understand but don't want to talk about publicly, such as a phone number that you've missed or an address that we've given out, and we'll give out a lot of them on the show, so you might want to have a pen or pencil nearby. Give a call to 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, for those who are alphabetically minded. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization that is a decade old and that is concerned with civil rights for homeless people. There are other organizations, too, concerned with that. I believe there's one forming to circulate a massive letter to City Council. I actually was approached by one of their petitioners at the Mifune NAACP rally at the Civic Auditorium last week. And that may be, that's certainly good when folks are circulating a letter trying to get City Council to remember its responsibilities, remember the promises that it made during its election campaign, and remember the fact that there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people outside every night who become criminals after 11 o'clock at night if they either fall asleep or cover up with a blanket in the city limits. These aren't horror stories. These aren't exaggerations. This is, in fact, the simple truth in Santa Cruz, the grim, ugly, simple truth. And that's something we want to change, something we hope to change, something that programs like this, through informing the public, through hopefully getting some of you riled up enough to do more than simply listen on the issue, but actually began speaking on it and calling the City Council at 420-5017. That's their 24-hour cold line. Some would call it a hotline. I call it a cold line because City Council's been pretty cold on this issue. But the more they hear about it, the more they have to address it or realize that they face consequences through not addressing it. 420-5017. The consequences of being discredited, the consequences of the communities realizing that they don't stand behind their commitments, that they don't care about the poorest of the poor, that they don't want to deal with basic human rights issues, and probably are putting the city in a position of liability, financial liability, as Atlanta and Miami and other cities found out when they criminalized homeless people for sleeping and then were told by the courts, you can't do this unless there are safe spaces and shelters and places for people to go to. And of course, in Santa Cruz, there are 160 spaces in the winter, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 people who need to sleep each night. So it's obviously pretty clear what's going on here is a get out of town or get out of sight deal. And that's not acceptable, particularly not in a community like Santa Cruz, particularly not for a city council which prides itself on having a Green Party mayor. Indeed, the Green Party itself has accepted as a dictum, as a part of its statewide platform, an end to all sleeping bans, decriminalization of homeless people, and locally, they were very specific, they would made it clear they would not endorse any candidate who did not specifically call for an end to the sleeping ban, striking Section A of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, or camping ordinance, which is the sleeping ban section. And, of course, Ed Porter, who was endorsed by that group, has done absolutely nothing. Arnie Leff, who ran and I think split the vote and resulted in a Kennedy being elected instead of, let's say, Scott Bugenthal, though it's not clear that that would have been a hell of a lot better, because neither Bugenthal nor Leff have stood up and spoken on this issue at all as public people. Leff is the head of the Citizens Police Review Board. Bugenthal is a well-respected person who got a lot of publicity, and people put money into his campaign during the fall. The fact that he's failed means he should crawl back into the woodwork? I think not. He hasn't returned one of my phone calls. He looked at me in some puzzlement when I brought this to his attention at City Council. But having brought it to his attention, I still got no response to any phone calls. Similarly with Leff, who is the head of the Citizens Police Review Board, we've gotten these postures for election campaigns, but no substance, no follow-up. And, of course, that means we have to follow up, and we have to bring this issue forward. And I commend groups like Art and Revolution that are planning in mid-February events around the absurdity of the city's sleeping ban. I think there's a public event planned in downtown Pacific Avenue. Perhaps they'll be announcing that soon. We have a call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Good morning, Bathrobes here.
Good morning.
I only have a minute, but I thought I'd spend it this way.
Okay.
You know, I have to take your word for what you're saying about Arnie Leff. I don't know. I haven't heard anything up or down about his personal stating his views on the sleeping criminality, but the review board that he chairs adopted the whole Homeless Issues Task Force report in total, and in the course of doing that, they rejected the whole camping ban.
That's true, and I'm there to be commended for that. But the problem is that, first of all, it took them 6 months to even get that thing on the agenda, and second of all, since that April meeting where they did that, or maybe it was March, there has been absolutely no action from the CPRB on relations between the homeless and the police, on following up on that, on showing, for example, that it was January or February, directive was given to the staff to investigate places for homeless people to sleep. This was renewed by unanimous vote in June and the Crone resolution in the same session that killed the safe sleeping zones. And nothing has come out of that with the city council. I'm kind of skipping to a separate issue there. But the point I was making was that Leff has done nothing since the campaign as a private citizen and a man who is in a public position to raise this issue at a time when people are dying outside, freezing outside, and I think it was essentially a political posture. Nor has his Green Party been raising
issue. I don't know if what the review board adopted was a political posture, because he wasn't the one really taking the initiative.
No, the review board did. It adopted the whole Homeless Issues Task Force resolution, probably because they didn't want to take the time to go through them.
No, because had a few good people who pushed it further than the weaker vote that was proposed, but that wasn't Arnie.
Well, as I understood it, the vote that was proposed on the sleeping ban ran afoul of people who weren't sure, like Dan Alper, who didn't know what they wanted to look it over in some detail. They wanted to get oriented on it. Those orientation sessions were never scheduled, and instead, what they came back with was, and I could be wrong about this, Linda, maybe you were there for a longer meeting. I recognize you, by the way. We're talking to Housing Now in Santa Cruz. Co-founder.
The remains of Linda.
And you, in fact, were the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yeah, that's why I thought I should speak up for it.
I remember how shabbily the city council treated you when they rejected every single one of your resolutions, with the exception of hire a cop for a non-existent safe sleeping zone.
That was the city's mistake. We're not done with them. That was a very wrong step.
I'm glad to hear that.
Off more middle-class people than they meant to.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that all, not just the city council incumbents, but also the candidates who ran on this, like Leff, have done absolutely nothing since November, and we're now in January, to raise the issue to council. I haven't heard from him. I haven't heard a peep out of him. I haven't heard a peep out of Bugenthal. I haven't heard a peep out of Jake Fathy or Jacob Olthoff, the student candidates, or even, Peter Cook did mention something in a letter. Let's give Peter a pat on the back.
I think we really should encourage Peter, too, and validate his work, because in the course of campaigning, he changed his position about housing and who needs housing, from a very elitist position as a landlord to an understanding that everyone deserves and needs housing.
Right.
But that's rare, and it's probably because he was young.
Yeah,
that he
definitely.
Could learn.
I mean, Peter Cook was one of three people who attended the forums, both the Fiesta and the Beach Flats, for those Hispanic residents who were trying to keep their housing without having it demolished. And then again, the forum on television, where there was a 3-hour analysis of the Dolphin Lee demolition plan, which is now proceeding full speed ahead, and comes up on the agenda again on Tuesday, by the way, in a special closed session. The Lee property is up on the chopping block again without any kind of open session allowing that. But I know you got to go, Linda. Or feel free to stay. You said you had to go. I don't mean to.
Someone's coming to pick me up, and I might have to leave abruptly.
Uh-huh. Well, please, stay as long as you can. My point is that people like Ed Porter, who got Green Party endorsement, have done absolutely nothing in any public way to put the issue of the sleeping ban on the agenda, or even a lesser issue like expanding shelter throughout the winter. And this is, to me, a real betrayal of his election promises and his constituency and of the Green Party. And what has the Green Party done? Absolutely nothing to hold him accountable.
Well,
I mean, it's disgusting.
Maybe they're in the process of it. I don't know. They pick a meeting time I can't make, even though I'm a Green.
Well,
I don't mean to sound like an apologist.
No, we had Nick Whitehead on the air. He is forming a homelessness committee.
Cool.
And I kind of said, Nick, for the whole last year, you know, you've let Tim Fitzmaurice get away with murder. Now, I mean, is there any real chance that you're going to hold Fitzmaurice, who is indeed engaging in a lawsuit against homeless activists rather than deal with substantive issues of the sleeping ban, are you going to hold him accountable? And, of course, you know, he felt I was attacking him. I said, no, Nick, I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking the indolence and complacency, and I don't know what it is, sucking up to power or afraid to challenge the big boys' attitude that's in the Green Party and in SCAN and all these organizations. They're just afraid. Peace and Freedom hasn't done anything. I haven't heard Maureen Smith standing up and making demands for ending the, you know, sleeping ban, although I understand that she's no longer the Peace and Freedom Party contact, that it's Steve Argue who has spoken on that issue.
Oh, that would be new, nice energy, good stuff.
Right.
I think both the Peace and Freedom Party and the Green Party need to be more active. I agree with you, in other words. And that's not going to bring back the lives of the people that are already dead for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a place to focus some energy and to press for clear responses and accountability.
Yeah.
I mean, they should be demanding that from the electeds, whether they're from their party or not.
Mm-hmm.
But all of us need to demand more from our respective political arms.
Maybe instead of giving out the numbers of the city council, 420-5017, for those of you who are interested, you can call them now, 420-5017, tell them to end the sleeping ban. But we should be giving out the numbers of SCAN and the Green Party, because these are the organizations whose endorsements helped get these clowns elected. And it just sort of, it really gets me kind of, I don't know, cranky, to say the least, that there's nothing being done by these groups in any visible way to hold these people accountable for their, murderous inaction, negligent inaction?
I've been criticized and shunned for using words like genocide, but it looks like class genocide to me nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it matters what words we choose. I think it matters that we talk to a lot more people, that, you know, people all over town, whether they see themselves as political or not, need a re-education. If we succeed, things like dumping the safe spots fiasco that the police seem to have arranged to come out like a carnival won't think, you know, they'll have a better understanding of their role in what ends up being murderous.
Mm-hmm.
Deadly, I should say deadly.
Yeah, deadly. I mean,
there has to be intent for it to be murder.
Mm-hmm.
And selfishness may not really be intent. We can figure that out later. First, we have to change the law.
Well, I guess the question is, if you know your grandmother is outdoors in the freezing cold and you keep the door locked and have the cops guarding the door, is it murder or are you just sort of, you know, guarding your door? I don't know what the story is there.
Right, and there's probably more than one answer. But if these are people you knew or should have known because they're your relatives, that kind of, you know, should impact your view of it.
It's a pretty piss-poor record anyway, whether it's murder or just simply politics as usual, you know, call it what you want.
Yeah,
this is Santa Cruz, you know.
Or accelerated money-grubbing politics,
Scott
perhaps.
Kennedy runs overseas to play Palestinian peacemaker, but he can't seem to get his shit together to deal with basic human rights in Santa Cruz. In fact, he propounds laws that criminalize homeless people for peaceful acts of spare changing after dark. He propounds laws that involve closing the parks and closing the riverside at night. He's actually, the park law wasn't his law, but the riverside law was, the curfews were, the cops on campus were, which is another area. It's not
what
about the homeless.
What does propound mean?
Put forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
It pushes it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I think as an individual, he's one of the few sitting now that actually take homeless people in, but we need to get him to act as a public servant, too.
Well, I mean, Tim Fitzmaurice threw a $20 bill at Marie Curie, I understand, last year. You know, how nice.
Hour of a hotel?
You know, and Tim Fitzmaurice goes regularly to these homeless gatherings that happen once a year where people are mourned. He takes off his hat and looks down at the ground. But then again, he continues criminalizing homeless people.
I think you exaggerate a little bit on what he does. It's more than once a year he looks for these photo ops, in my opinion, which I think makes it even more wrong not to do something about it. You know, it's not just once a year. He marries people.
No, I know. I know. He does a number of things. A number of symbolic gestures.
But they're still homeless when he's done.
No question. This is, you know, the man I call Emperor Tim. Some have urged me to call him Fuhrer Fitzmaurice.
Ooh,
and they said he's getting so dour that he reminds them of Chancellor Hitler in his bad moments.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I mean,
I hope they're not exactly right.
Right, I mean, and of course, and his process at City Council is so arbitrary and so personally directed against activists he does not like. It's certainly
under the banner of more decorum.
And he now uses a police officer, a sergeant actually, Sergeant Hennig. If you walk up and try to give your green card directly to the clerk, you will be interrupted by the sergeant at arms with a gun and a badge, who will take the green card from you, walk three steps, and give it to the clerk.
Wow. Well, maybe we don't have to re-educate the whole public. Maybe they're just going to get so mean-spirited that everyone will rise up at the same time.
Well, this is all for decorum, you see, to make sure everything runs smoothly, right?
Yeah, but this is Santa Cruz. Uh-huh. Do you see that taking? I don't know.
Well, nobody's objecting.
So I got to go, but you should make an announcement about your court date while you're on this
podcast. I will.
Thanks,
Linda.
Bye.
And that's long-suffering, longtime activist Linda LeMaster, head of housing now in Santa Cruz, former chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, city council candidate in 1992, when she also was in jail for occupying the Heiner House, and along with myself and others, being responsible for having that building saved so that it can be used for a single-family housing. They were going to destroy it. We occupied it, and they were embarrassed into saving it. So good things can be done by direct action, sometimes by civil disobedience, sometimes by lobbying, sometimes by making a lot of noise where the authorities in power would prefer that you very quietly go along so that not everybody notices what's happening. I've also been critical of Linda at different times for different things, too. I mean, Linda is not well in terms of she's a disabled person. She's got back problems and asthma problems, really serious ones that led to a lot of give her a lot of pain and make what she does do more valuable for those of us who are a part of that process. She doesn't get the appreciation she needs. I have always been pushing her and the Homeless Issues Task Force people to come forward with a press conference demanding City Council act, even though they're no longer a formal body. I think they could have a significant effect. I'm still hoping that at some point in the future they will do that. The Homeless Issues Task Force, for those of you who have forgotten or never knew, was the group put forward by Chris Crone, council member, when he was sold out by Catherine Byers and Tim Fitzmaurice 2 years ago, and they wouldn't even look at changing the sleeping ban in 1999. Instead, they threw him a little bone, which was the Homeless Issues Task Force. And the first thing the Homeless Issues Task Force did was say, end the whole camping ordinance, not just the sleeping ban. It's nice to let people sleep, but you got to let them put up a tent and warm themselves if there's no shelter. It's just as simple as that. Pretty elementary. The Paul Brindell's Community Action Board Shelter Project had recommended that years ago and still stands by that position. I mean, it's a pretty sensible position, and one would hope that if it ever reached federal courts, although we have a bizarre court system and one can never be sure, that would be the outcome. And some folks are looking for an attorney legal challenge on this whole issue. And for those interested, you might want to contact Huff if you're interested in supporting a legal challenge, 423-HUFF. Linda's been working hard, and I do want to put in some good words for her. She has some sympathy sometimes for people like Scott Kennedy that I just do not understand, but Linda has a heart that maybe is larger than mine, and she understands that even politicians are human beings. I tend to stop at the... To me, it stops at the waterline. When you enter politics and you start removing people's human rights, I don't feel like I have to, get all mushy about you and as a human being. as long as I don't violate your rights, that's as far as I go with you, and until you step down from that political podium, and then you're no longer, I think, fair game. Hence, I'm not attacking Cynthia Matthews much these days, because she's gone, former council member Matthews, though she, I understand, still holds certain positions of power in this town, such as Planned Parenthood and other things that might make her a legitimate target. But the issues are, you know, my point, of course, in this last discussion was call City Council, 420-5017, call the Green Party and scan. Maybe my producer, if I can persuade her to, can grab those numbers off the computer and phone them in so we can let people know what the scan number is if you're a scan member, or what the Green Party part number is if you're a Green Party member, and even if you're not, just to say, hey, I'm a member of the public, but I'm just wondering, are you going to ever hold these people accountable? Does scan and Green Party positions mean anything? Or is it just some sort of, you know, pufferoony flim-flam show to get the candidates elected, and then they do whatever they want? And you could say, oh, he's a Green. Oh, he's a scan member. Yeah, right. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's, I mean, I do know. That's what it looks like. And I have more confidence or hope for the Greens than I do for scan, which reaches the point of kind of maximum corruption overload where they are rigging their own elections for steering committee. That happened last November. And I'm not saying rigging them in the sense of they all sat down and decided they wanted to elect these people, but they set up election processes that skewed the elections in favor of the incumbents in such an obvious way and made no attempt to correct them. We have another call coming in.
Hi, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz talking to you.
Yeah, the Green Party telephone number, for those who are interested, is 429-4301.
Uh-huh, 429-4301 for the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And hold on a second, I'll get you the scan number as well. And the scan, which is Santa Cruz Action Network, that number is 458-9425.
Mm-hmm. 458-9425. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right.
Wow. That was quick service there. So again, Greens, 429-4301, scan, 458-9425. Give these clowns, I use the word freely these days, a call and ask them, you know, if they are going to hold their candidates accountable. The Greens endorsed Ed Porter and Tim Fitzmaurice. SCAN has endorsed virtually everybody on the council but Premack and Kennedy. They endorsed Emily Riley. They endorsed Ed Porter. They endorsed Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar. So they are the culprits. They're the gang that brought you the current city council. As for Premack and Kennedy, let's not leave these guys out. Though I'm rather harsh about incumbents who ignore basic human rights and will continue to be, at the bottom I kind of retain this strange hope that, you know, there's some never land where we can all meet as human beings and talk about these issues and get past all these disagreements and understand what basic human rights are and just deal with them. You know, that's always the hope. And of course that's always the hope that is betrayed generally, and it doesn't really go anywhere. But I mean, you know, Kennedy's a very companionable kind of character. You know, he'll chat and joke with you if you find him around. Premack is much more difficult to approach. During the campaign, he was approachable, though he was prone to long speeches. When I tried to approach him at city council last week, he sort of announced to me that he was not going to talk to me ever. Didn't want to make an appointment with me because he felt it would be a complete waste of his time. He didn't even know what I wanted to talk to him about. He didn't inquire into that. He sort of used an ad hominem. Oh, it's this guy, Robert Norris, coming to talk to me. I don't need to talk to him. And to me, this is bad in a number of ways. You shouldn't do this with a member of the public. I mean, maybe if you've had a conversation with this person about a particular issue and you've gone through the whole territory, unless the person's raising something new, it might be reasonable to say, hey, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I got other people I need to talk to. It's more important. But if you don't even know what the issue is that he's raising, and you're simply doing that on the basis of saying, the other council members don't like him, or, you know, some of my constituents don't like this guy, You're not elected to represent one area town. We don't have district elections. We have citywide elections. You are supposed to represent everybody. So this kind of approach is discriminatory. And that's what I told him. I said, that's discriminatory, Mark. Now, that's not what I believe you are elected to do. Not that he's going to pay much attention to me, mind you, but I think that's important that we know that, that we know that the real moral situation here, the real deal, so to speak. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we are at 96.3 FM. Phone number is 427-3772. Voicemail, 427-4523. 427-4523. P.O. Box, if you want to write us with a loop tape, a public service announcement, possibly a large cash donation, a demo tape, whatever. P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. We are also online. So if you are fortunate or unfortunate enough to not live in Santa Cruz, or you're in a position where you can't really hear the station very well, but you do have access to a computer, you can reach us at www.microradio.net/FRSC. www.microradio.net/FRSC. And I want to really commend the technicians who put that together. It means people in different cities can hear us. And it's particularly important, I think, for my show. I'm hoping today to get a call in from Catherine Rhodes in Providence, Rhode Island, who may be able to listen to our show even as she, before she calls in, as she calls in, and after she calls in. She works for a group called People Helping People, and she was one of the people brutalized by the LAPD this summer at the, I call it the, isn't the Bush coronation. That happened, of course, this month, but it was the previous coronation, the Democratic Party coronation of Al Gore, the guy whose name will be completely forgotten in about a year, I predict, or at least I'm already beginning to forget it. Anyway, police beat bunches of people up. Catherine Rhodes was in a homeless march to the Democratic delegates to try to persuade them to deal with homeless issues under the leadership of someone I'm not particularly happy with, and sort of a, I don't know, Republican Party wannabe, a fellow named Ted Hayes, who works for a thing called Dignityville, which is a small oil company-funded project which provides for a little bit of homeless shelter in L.A. But they beat these guys up, too. The police were equal opportunity beaters. It's quite something. Join this conversation if you'd like, 427-3772, and maybe you'll be hearing from Catherine. We'll be hearing from Catherine Rhodes. We're hoping she'll be calling in. A couple of other announcements. Club Cruise, the community television show that often deals with homeless and counterculture issues, will be having Richard Quigley as a guest on Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock. It's actually not live. It's a taped show. I was the host. Richard Quigley was the guest. You may remember Richard if you are an occasional reader of the Santa Cruz Urinal, also known as the Santa Cruz Sentinel. It's the newspaper that we're stuck with, useful for covering up your head in the rain and for lining the trash can. It also had a rare front-page story about Richard Quigley, who is a kind of an old-time freedom fighter. I ran into him when he was selling T-shirts and petitioning for Sandra Loringer, the woman convicted of serving free food to the homeless back in 1989. We called her Sly Shoes Sandy, and she was convicted by Judge Robert Artichoke Hart Attic, or Judge Attic, in his court for 30 days, 7 years before I was convicted, or 6 years before, actually before I went to jail. I was convicted 4 years later in San Francisco. Essentially, similar behavior of engaging in unwise distribution of sandwiches. Mine was rice and salad and bagels to homeless people in a public place that embarrassed the politicians. And Quigley was there along with Kate Wells, the attorney who has now been taken dozens, if not scores, if not hundreds of homeless cases in the last decade for no charge, although she doesn't do that much anymore. The two of them were there at the courthouse defending Sandy Loringer, getting people to sign petitions against her incarceration, which is being pushed by people like Mayor, now Supervisor Marty Wormhout, who has never apologized for that behavior. And indeed, she continues to harass the homeless by burying proposals for homeless reform and shelter in her things like her winter shelter advisory committee at the Board of Supervisors, or routing them to the Continuum of Care, which is a essentially dead-end group that has no facility for dealing with the Needs 2000 census, which was done last year and showed a huge increase in homeless people. And some very shocking figures that a great percentage of the homeless were local and came here and were born here or been here for a very long time or working, all those things. But Supervisor Wormhout and then Mayor Wormhout couldn't be bothered with that stuff, which, by the way, is a good reason to ask her whenever you see her. What about the homeless, Marty? See her? Ask her that. Just salute her with that question. And if she says, what are you talking about? I say, why have you got a sleeping ban in the county? Why aren't you doing something about that? You know, why isn't there some action being taken to set up a variety of campgrounds and shelters in the county? You have the funding for it. You can do it. You're getting huge grants. Go for it. And she needs to be called to account. But Quigley will be coming on community TV for half an hour to talk about a variety of subjects. He challenged the helmet law, you may remember, for motorcycle riders successfully. He's also been instrumental in the Take Me to a Magistrate defense, still as yet untested local defense, which has got the authorities sufficiently nervous that they've put that onto their legal form so that one of the things that a sheriff is supposed to check or a deputy or a police officer is supposed to check when they arrest you, or I assume a California Highway Patrol officer, any of the local jurisdictions, they are supposed to check. I was informed of his Take Me to a Magistrate rights. Take Me to a Magistrate, as you may remember, is the right which Kate Wells and Quigley say you have, and apparently the authorities give it some credence because it wouldn't be on the form if it weren't, which is if you're arrested for a violation of the vehicle code, you can demand immediately to go to a magistrate and be told the probable cause that you were arrested for and have a bail set before that magistrate and be released immediately rather than sit in jail and wait 48 hours to go before our usual court. They're supposed to be either take you straight to a magistrate, even if it's Sunday, within an hour or two, or they're supposed to have a person designated at the jail. This is the claim, and I have never... I think there's at least one case going through the courts now on that issue, and I'm hoping that we can get more information on that from Kate Wells at a future time. But anyway, Quigley is the proponent of that. Quigley ran for sheriff some years ago. He was a controversial supporter of Kate Canales under the old "let's bring down the whole house" theory. I guess he felt Canales would be easier to get rid of in 2 years if she didn't deal with the drug war in a completely different way, which, of course, I think it's highly unlikely she will. But Ruiz didn't do any better on the drug war either, so it's hard to say. He's going to be on Channel 27 from 7 to 7:30 on Tuesday and Thursday nights if you have community television. And he's also a frequent guest here. And by the way, if there are guests on the air that you particularly like, you listeners out there, particularly you regulars, because much as I love to get new people, frankly speaking, it's the regulars who probably keep me coming back here because at least I feel I'm talking to somebody, although you never know who you're talking to on this station until people call in and tell you. If there's a guest you want to see come back, if there's a guest you don't want to see come back, we did this with a theme song, and we're still trying to figure out how to get a good theme song, but similarly with guests, we'd like to involve the listenership. I would like to involve the listenership in this process. Give a call. Give a call on air if you want to talk about it on air, 427-3772, guests you're looking for. You've enjoyed in the past, you want to see them come back. Guests you suggest we should have that are relevant to subjects of civil rights and the homeless or police misconduct, or sometimes we hit the drug war because that hits the homeless pretty hard. We cover a number of other subjects based to some extent on my personal preferences. 427-3772 is the on-air number. Off-air, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And if you want to, of course, get a message to Free Radio for some other purpose, it's 427-4523. So, that is sort of our intro, though we have more stuff coming up. Let's listen to a little of Bob LaMonica. Bob is a sometimes controversial figure who has been involved in a number of campaigns, ranging from the recall of the DA to the sleeping ban initiative of 1997-98, which got thousands of signatures but didn't quite make it on the ballot, to the rent control. Bob's recent rent control petition, which city council members were very, very timid about even looking at, and they still can't say the words without turning pink, rent control, although I think LaMonica pointed out to me that Chris Krohn used the dreaded words in recent interviews with Heather Berner of the Sentinel about a week and a half ago. Bob has been working with rent control over the Hill. Apparently the San Jose activists are less shy about dealing with rent control, beginning to talk about it. And I'm trying to get down on that issue, too. One of the three issues that I brought forward in a petition 3 or 4 days ago, signing people up at the NAACP Mufuni gathering that they had at the Civic Auditorium, was rent control, the sleeping ban, and harassment of bicyclists. They seem to kind of picking those things out of a hat, but they've been hot issues in the last few weeks, and they're real issues that continue over time as well. So let's hear a little bit of Bob LaMonica on rent control and what's been cooking with that.
January 20th, 2001, and around 5 to 6, I'm talking to activist Bob LaMonica, a man who's been working to see some rent control in Santa Cruz for many a moon. Hi, Bob.
Robert, how you doing?
I'm good. You apparently have been kind of unable to find any fertile soil here in Santa Cruz. You've been making the journey over the hill to San Jose.
Yes, that's true. Joe Rodriguez, who's a reporter for the Sentinel, very effectively, I think it's going to play out, launched what will be the start of a rent control movement. This liable to hit a statewide level over the hill last summer with his column in the Mercury. There was a meeting in December that was that drew about 300 people. It was just kind of like a kickoff meeting. There was a meeting last week, Thursday the 18th, that drew between 75 and 80 activists, and it has the support of the SEIU over the hill. In fact, the meeting took place at the SEIU hall, Local 715 of the SEIU.
That's the Service Employees International Union?
Right. Now, they are solidly behind rent control for Santa Clara County. The next meeting in Santa Clara County is going to be February 1st, which is a Thursday, at 6:30 p.m. at the SEIU hall, which is located at 2960 North 1st Street, which is just south of the Montague Expressway. My sense of what's going on over there is they have the momentum, the connections, and the wherewithal to make this happen. One of these towns is going to do it. And in fact, it might even be unincorporated Santa Clara County that makes the first move. They're, like here in Santa Cruz, the Board of Supervisors does have jurisdiction in the unincorporated areas. There is one Board of Supervisor, that is one supervisor, excuse me, Jim Beal, who's the chair this year, that is, at least has indicated support for rent control. And what might be the first step is a tenants' rights union that's funded by the county of Santa Clara. So my sense is what's going on over the hill, where you can draw from 1.5 million people, the differences between Santa Clara County and Santa Cruz is, of course, size. They have a much larger population base, so you can get 80 people in a room that are going to be attracted towards rent control. They have 40% renters over there. The momentum is there. My sense is that one of these towns is going to do it, and it's going to spread like wildfire. There's already talk about a statewide movement from some of the Berkeley folks. Bob Brownstein is active once again, who was instrumental in San Jose having rent control back in 1979. He was there. He's going to be heading the San Jose aspect of this effort over the hill. I think it's very exciting. I think what we're going to see coming out of the Santa Clara County effort is the beginnings of a rent movement that is going to really take hold. Very exciting.
Now, what percentage of Santa Cruz County is renters?
The number that we get, in fact, the number that I got from Mike Rodkin in the city of Santa Cruz is 53%. It's slightly more than half.
Mm-hmm. And we certainly have been seeing some real panic buttons pushed here in Santa Cruz, ranging from Latino tenants who actually got some relief from the city council, with apparently the building inspectors moving in and telling the Rodriguez apartment owner that, you know, no fixie-up apartments, no raisy renties, sort of, to the folks there. Well, that was a welcome move. We've seen the Cypress Point, where we had this big scare last summer that this Texas company was going to double the rents and kick everybody out, and the city council sort of went into some, you know, tut-tut mode. We heard that they backed down, but now apparently they're proceeding with the same project, right?
Well, you know what it reminded me of? That was the first appeasement was last summer, I believe. It was like Chamberlain's appeasement of Hitler. Now, I'm just using this as an analogy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, waving the piece of paper. We are familiar with that film clip of Chamberlain waving the
peace in our time
and the peace in our time thing. Well, look, Cypress Point is realizing that what they've got is they've got a captive market. They can do whatever they damn well please without regulation. They're going to do what they damn well please. And what's being discovered is that renters, which are making up a sizable portion of our community, are left to the wiles of the market for such a basic necessity as housing. And I think what's happening with rent control and things like eviction protection, different aspects of renter regulation, is that we're beginning to see them in a less emotional and more rational light. If you cannot depend somewhat on your month-to-month existence, you're living in turmoil. You don't make a good employee. You don't make a good citizen. It's not a way to live. And I think what's beginning to happen, what I'm beginning to see, at least over the hill, in an activist standpoint, is that the general community is coming to accept the fact that, well, maybe rent control is not all that bad. Maybe it's got some positive aspects to it. Maybe we ought to look at it seriously. The San Jose Business Journal, by the way, has come out for rent control over the hill. So there's some significant moves that are happening in San Jose. The fact that the Mercury News has allowed Joe Rodriguez to write column after column after column in favor of rent control is very significant. I think what's the next step over the hill is going to be where the groups like the Santa Clara Valley Manufacturing Association begin to say that rent control is sensible for them to retain employees. If this real estate market is driven solely by bearing what the market will charge, what happens at a certain point is that you can't retain employees anymore.
Can you explain that?
Well, if you're paying over 50% of your income already for rent, and if you can't even get a six-month lease, you're living in a situation, it's so volatile that you don't even want to bother with coming here anymore. The majority of people that live in our area that don't own property, in all likelihood, are not going to own property. They're going to be renters indefinitely. And if they can't have some expectancy for the future, then they're living in turbulence. So they're not going to want to come here.
Now, I spoke to a local merchant who rents from the city. He's one of the merchants that rents from the, I think it's the Locust Street Garage, the garage where the one of the tenants is the Chinese restaurant, and I guess that you pay your parking tickets there and so forth, downtown in Santa Cruz. And he told me that residential renters have it a little better than commercial renters if they can get a lease. But the big deal now is that even commercial renters are finding they can't get a lease because the market is such a gravy train for profiteers. It's just month to month.
I think the very sad thing in the broad base is that we are in the, not only are we heading towards this, but this two-tiering of the economy is becoming extremely shocking and sobering and disheartening. As was pointed out to me a few days ago, the rolling blackouts, the gouging by the public utilities with electricity, it's like happening with deregulating of such a basic commodity as electricity. Some people are benefiting incredibly. If you own stock in Duke Energy or Calpine, you're making out quite well. If you don't, if you're the average consumer, especially if you're on a fixed income or you're not wealthy, you're going to be hurt significantly. Our electric bill, we have Green Mountain, went up by a multiple of 7 times compared to last year.
Amazing. You know, actually, we should be having a report on the same thing by Scott Graham on this show, but he has pointed out to me off-air that PG&E owns both the distribution companies and the companies that supply the power, but they've separated the management of those companies, so it's making hand over fist generating the power and selling it at huge prices to the distribution companies that are now claiming they're going bankrupt.
One of the things that this amazing crisis, this energy crisis, is doing for the renters, though, is it's indicating that we cannot deny that regulation has a place. That regulation in certain markets is a necessity. And when you take the lid off of something as basic a commodity as electricity, what's going to happen? Prices are going to go through the roof. Because nobody, most of us are not going to live in cold, in the dark.
Well, what are the prospects here in Santa Cruz for some kind of lid municipalization of power or some kind of controls around rent and electricity here?
Well, I'm going to say this first. I think that Santa Cruz, at this point, without proper leadership, is going to be on the back wing. It's going to react to what happens over the hill, and in Berkeley and in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's where this town is at now. I think my sense is that rent control is going to happen. It's going to be a wave, and the Santa Cruz will ultimately get on that wave on the back wing. Something is going to happen with electricity. And Santa Cruz is going to be on the back wing of it. I don't see leadership on these issues, Robert. But when there is a bandwagon, then you'll see the elected
political hacks
for it. I wish there were a more polite way to say that. Okay, but
mm-hmm.
maybe where I should be at with this issue is to express those things as best as I can. I do not see the leadership above board, which should be there. If people want to use the term progressive and liberal for themselves, well, then come out in your own community and stand up for the principles that you claim to be about.
Have you informed the city council of these various rent control meetings?
I informed the entire city council about the rent control meeting on the 18th.
And have you gotten any response from them?
No. There will be no response, Robert, until there is a bandwagon that can be usurped. Now, I hope I'm wrong, but that's where I remain with this issue, based upon experiences with the most progressive of the lot.
How can people who want to help on this issue get involved?
They can make contact with the group over the hill, and I'm going to give a contact number here in a minute when I find it. John Doherty is the coordinator's name, and give me a moment, and I'll pull up a number for you. If you want to get a hold of me here in Santa Cruz, Bob LaMonica, 466-0500. Rent control is far from dead. Rent control is inevitable, and it's going to happen. It would be nice to have much more of a contingency here in Santa Cruz. Going over the hill, I'd be happy to offer a carload of, give people a ride if they'd like. But the number to make contact with the Tenants' Rights Association over the hill is 408-280-2430. There's a meeting Thursday, February 1st, 6:30 at SEIU Hall, which is 2960 North 1st Street. I'm going to be there mainly focusing on San Jose, but I think it's good to network across the board.
Thursday at 6:30 on February 1st.
At SEIU Hall, San Jose.
And if you're interested in getting in touch with Bob for more information, it's 466-0500.
Exactly.
Hey, Bob LaMonica, thank you for keeping the light burning here.
Robert, thank you very much. I'll be listening to your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Bob LaMonica, rent control activist, speaking to us by phone about a week ago. You're tuned now to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our lines are open. We've actually contacted Bob during this tape broadcast. And if he has something additional to add, he'll be calling in to give us sort of the update, if there is an update. Rent control, to me, is a key issue that should be tied in with the sleeping ban to get a broader kind of front, if you will, to deal with both the issues, though perhaps some would say you might get people who oppose one issue in favor of the other. But they're really closely tied, because if you criminalize homeless people outside, and you have no rent control, you're in a position where landlords get increasing power, because people who are in houses, they can't just move into their vans. They have to worry about being criminalized and having that criminalization appear on their job records and so forth.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Robert, Bob LaMonica, how you doing?
Hey, Bob.
The one thing that can, there's an article by Joe Rodriguez in Saturday's Merc that is very interesting. It talks about John Doherty, who is the activist over the hill that's spearheading the Santa Clara County effort. Locally here, I sent a letter to Cliff Tillman, who is the director of the SEIU, requesting them to endorse rent control here in Santa Cruz County, as did the SEIU over the hill. And I sent copies of my letter to the Santa Cruz City Council and the Sentinel, and I believe you got a copy of that. And we'll wait to see what comes back from them, but I think it's appropriate to request the SEIU Local 415 to come forth and do the right thing. However provocative this issue may be, it's time to stand up for principle in our community.
Now, do you have that story by, is it Joe Rodriguez?
It would be in Saturday's Sentinel, or Saturday's Merc, I'm sorry, in the local section of the Merc, and it'd be the part that comes to Santa Cruz, too, by the way.
You don't have it available to read aloud, do you?
It's downstairs. I don't happen to have it right handy with me.
Do you think it's worth reading on the air? Should people hear it?
There would be bits of it that might be, but I don't want to kind of maneuver downstairs to get it. It mainly talks about Doherty, John Doherty, who is a lawyer with a poverty law firm over the hill. I would say he's 30-something, Doherty, and I think he's an ideal person to had this effort. Bob Brownstein is back again, who was fundamental for San Jose's rent control in the late 70s. Things have, of course, heated up in a very different way now, as we discussed after the meeting last Thursday. Bob Brownstein and I, the situation now is, as I said when you interviewed me, there's no expectancy of rate stabilization whatsoever now. People are paying exorbitant amounts of money for ramshackle housing, and still their rents are being jacked up. So we're in a kind of a new era for this, and I think that when, once again, I'll say that when the emotionalism is removed from the issue, when it's shown that we're talking about regulating residential housing, that the worst outcome that you get out of rent control is, yes, you do get a bureaucracy, but without that bureaucracy, you're having people live in turbulence and turmoil. And I stress this. Renters get no equity and appreciation benefits for what they pay for housing. And the least that our government, particularly those governments that consider themselves to be progressive, can provide is regulation, stability of rent increases. That's not a lot to ask. But I would say check out yesterday's Merc, the local section, Joe Rodriguez. If this rent control movement is what I think it is, and not just me, but there are many of us that see a statewide movement coming out of what's happening over the hill, if this is what I think it is, Joe Rodriguez deserves a lot of credit.
And a little credit, too, to Bob LaMonica.
Well, thank you very much. This present move, the momentum over the hill, I don't know why exactly that the Merc is allowing Rodriguez to publish what he's publishing. I think maybe they see it from an employer standpoint. If employers can't attract employees to the area, then Silicon Valley is going to lose its ability to attract new companies and to continue to grow. So I think from an employer standpoint, rent control is beginning to make sense in some people's eyes. And I think we're going to see a tide turning along that line. I believe that we're going to see this issue move from emotionalism to rationalism. But check out Rodriguez's column. Anybody that wants a ride to the meeting for rent control over the hill on Thursday, which is at 6:30, give me a call. My number is 466-0500. And, of course, stay in touch with yourself, Robert. I think we'll eventually see some action here in Santa Cruz.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Robert, thank you.
All
right. Take care.
All righty.
Bye.
Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, playing Russian roulette with you, but not with a the second-hand Saturday night special. Nah, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Downtown when you're brown, the muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the catcalls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on Saints Deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone.
Punk girl in the coffee house. About 19, sitting in the coffee house. A little plump, pink cotton candy hair. She looks fresh, like a warm, frosted pastry. So deep in whipped cream conversation with her friends, you could walk by, break off a few waving, green-tipped fingers, dunk them in your coffee and eat them, and she wouldn't even notice till the next time she reached for her death cigarettes. She's just out of the grimy oven of her black leather jacket, smelling cookie warm but still a little too moist. If you touched her skin, you'd leave a dent. She talks in gasps of laughter, passing her breath around like gold-wrapped chocolates. More, she gurgles, take more. A bursting black negligee, shiny as the top of an eclair, and swinging gumdrop necklaces, red, orange, and purple, her bare arms and soft throat are white as melted marshmallows. Every bite of her will stick to your fingers. You'll have to lick her off them slowly. Punk Girl in the Coffee House, from Julia Vinograd's new book, Blues for All of Us. Another one of her poems, Old Man Crossing the Street. Old man drags his feet after a cane, slowly. Light changes halfway across the street. Cars screech to a halt, lean on their horns, yell out their windows, give him the finger. If anything, he slows down. He's old. He can barely haul himself up the curb. His grandchildren don't write, but shiny new cars wait trapped as his cane takes its time. They hate him. It makes him young. Street Screamer. It's not the still small voice in the center of the whirlwind, but in the center of a lost mad scream that never ends from a street crazy so far down he's a pretzel with his dirty bare feet kicking his tonsils down his throat. In the center of a wailing scream that makes bricks bleed and brings cops. In the center of a street scream, there's a quiet little house, and I live there. There's a dish of apples on the windowsill and a white cat asleep on the front steps. For a second, I could almost reach out and open the door. I know it's never locked. Then the scream swallows the house again, and the crazy thrashes down the street. Lost. Inside out. Do we all live in that house of peace and can't reach it? Is that why he screams? Shadow Man. When the train whistle blows and it goes to the bone, about half an hour later, there's this man walking into town, walking real slow. And he didn't come by train, and he didn't ride the rails, and he doesn't breathe until that whistle blows. No, he doesn't breathe until that whistle blows. He's a man for love, and he's a man for drink, and he always knows just what to say. He casts a shadow till that train whistle blows, then he fades into smoke, and he blows away. He casts himself off like rattlesnake skin, tumbleweed shoes and dust on his tongue. He walks out of his life like a noose, loose hung. He's a shadow man, and as shadows can, he's back where it all begins. Train whistle goes to the bone. All alone. All alone. In Lonely's house. Lonely's house is big, so big he'll put you up in a birdcage to beat against the bars and sing of what went wrong. In Lonely's house, cuckoo clocks lay eggs on the hour, and Lonely eats them. Lonely breaks mirrors in his soup like crackers and puts gravy on mothballs. Lonely will fry your heart in wine sauce for years, carve it with a long, sharp knife, and eat it with a silver spoon while you're still trying to get away. In Lonely's house, there's always enough love letters burning in the fireplace to keep him warm. Lonely's breath is musty as a dance hall, closed for 20 years, where your dreams are stored under white drop cloths, along with the bandstand and little tables. Lonely will stick a straw down your throat and suck out all the kisses. Lonely's always thirsty. In Lonely's dungeon, you're chained to a photograph. The whips are woven smiles, and you're branded by a gentle hand that will never touch you again. Finally, you just sit there, and spiders spin their webs from nose to chin and between your fingers. In Lonely's house, music boxes play your song, and a porcelain couple dance like you used to, but they're not real, and you're alone. Lonely leans in to watch you. Lonely just loves music. In Lonely's house, when no one comes for dinner, he puts pink flamenco lawn ornaments in the black walnut chairs all down his long table and gives them all cigars. In Lonely's house, but where is Lonely's house? I've seen him in hotel rooms, boots stretched out on the bed, reading the King James Bible and giggling. I've seen him watching old women in flowered dresses at bus stops, pretending not to notice him. They're good. He's better. I've seen him on the first day of school. The books he carries are blank. I've seen him on the last days. Locks won't keep out Lonely. His house is your house. His house is mine. And that's In Lonely's House from Blues for All of Us, new book by Julia Vinograd, Berkeley street poet. You can get it up in Berkeley at the Mediterranean Cafe from Julia Vinograd herself, the bubble lady. She's usually sitting at the first table as you walk in the door up there on Telegraph. Or if you want to see it, I'm going to try to get a copy of this to the Santa Cruz Public Library main branch. Good book, as usual. This is about her 43rd or 44th book. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, and phone number, in case you want to call in. Maybe you got a poem of your own to read, 427-3772. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier Robert Norris, and this is our twice-weekly Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides show, and it runs from 11 to 1:30 today on Sundays, and then on Thursdays from 6 to 8. And you can catch us off-air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Now, the last month has had a number of council meetings. In the first couple of council meetings, I was not allowed to go to because the mayor, in his wisdom, and I do believe it was him, though his name is not on the lawsuit, secured a restraining order through the city attorney, stopping me, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner from going to the city council offices. That's room 10, which actually is the whole building. As you walk to city council from the library, it's that whole building on your left that comes before the city council chambers and the city clerk's office. It's right across from the civic auditorium. It's the building that houses every city council member's office, the city manager's office, the offices where you look up documents for the mayor's correspondence, the city council correspondence, staff reports from numerous committees like the Homeless Issues Task Force. So it's really quite a valuable public resource. It's kind of a public area, much of that office area. The foyer area that you walk into when you first enter, and there are secretaries on your right and your left, also known as administrative assistants, Suzanne and Anna. And then you can go further in, and that's still really considered public if you want to go look at the some of the document files of past correspondence. What did mayors write back? What did council members write back to the public? What correspondence came into them? What are the staff reports about the safe sleeping zones and the question of rent control? What's come in here? So that's really a valuable public resource. We have been barred the three of us from that office. And we were barred because for 17 days in December, we sat in the three chairs for a couple hours a day, each of us, almost never more than 4 hours, often less. And there were about 20 people who rotated with us to do this. We had a sign about the sleeping ban. We had some literature. And we made appointments with city council members, or tried to, left them notes asking them to put on the agenda the issue of ending the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. And in response, Secretary Anna Brooks, actually I guess an administrative assistant, claimed we were harassing her by being there. She claimed that we were pilfering pens, trying to make change with a $20 bill, talking at the top of our voices for hours on end. And in order to show the public and the courts this was not true, we began tape recording round the clock to show that everything we were doing was within the bounds of decorum, within the bounds of the First Amendment. And that issue became a real issue when on December 27th, without consulting us, without giving us a hearing, Judge Samuel Stevens barred us from a 50-yard area around the Santa Cruz City Department 10, that room, which included the whole city council complex. We went back to court on the 10th of January, and we got them to modify that injunction and make it so that we could come to public meetings, except apparently in room 10, although that's not clear there, and we could come to public offices only on business, but it still means we can't, for example, talk to homeless people outside city council offices or anywhere on the city council grounds. And we are still, in essence, barred from coming inside and doing the kind of peaceful lobbying effort that we were doing before. It's not even appropriate to call it a protest, because we weren't really in, you know, we weren't saying, hey, sleeping ban's got to go, nothing like that. You know, we just sat there and attempted, when a councilmember came through, we talked to you about the sleeping ban, and, you know, we'd like to make an appointment and so forth and so on, which is what people normally do in those offices. So this issue comes back to court on the 31st. That's next Wednesday at 8:30 in Samuel Stevens Court. And the issue that's coming back is not whether this restraining order is justified in terms of all the claims that the secretary makes, that Anna Brooks makes. She's the person supposedly behind the order, but since it was served by the city police, and she didn't have to pay anything to get it, and the city attorney is handling it, it looks really pretty clear to us that it's coming from the mayor, and he doesn't want us there, and he's not willing to, you know, let's say, engage in the kinds of negotiations which would remove us, which is to say, keep his commitments, or give us some reasonable alternative to ending the sleeping ban, to deal with the fact that there are thousands, well, 1,500 to 2,000 people out each night without a legal place to sleep, who face $54 tickets, beatings, harassment, midnight wake-ups, accidental death, that sort of thing, which I think would be considerably cut if people could sleep in groups in well-lighted areas and so forth. If he would address these issues, there would be, you know, a real dialogue going on. But instead, he prefers to play enraged schoolteacher, and he's using Anna Brooks as a kind of an excuse for claiming that we are harassing her. He can't say we're harassing him, because he's a politician, and that would we have the right to address him. We certainly don't have the right to harass anyone. I mean, I don't believe in harassment, although I don't believe that raising your voice to politicians in public places, for example, is harassment. I think it goes with the territory, and I think the courts agree with me on that, although I don't have the case citations here. Anyway, we couldn't come to the first city council meeting. I should say the second city council meeting, which was on the 9th of January, after John Barisoni, the city attorney, got this ridiculous injunction, and this sinister injunction. Instead, some folks went and spoke on our behalf. Steve Argue spoke, Laura Tucker spoke, and Evelyn Schoenfeld spoke. And I played a little of that on an earlier Bathrobe's Piers broadside. I'm going to play again Laura Tucker's speech, and I'm going to play Evelyn Schoenfeld's speech. And I'm going to play some more stuff from city council meetings in the last month to give you some idea of, one, the support we have, but two, the kinds of nasty response we're getting from Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice. In a way, it's good in a certain sense, because it will show the court and hopefully the community the kind of unfair, the bias, the harsh bias that is really becoming a clear part of Emperor Fitzmaurice's regime here. And I use the word emperor advisedly. He's changed the city council rules so that you can't have a video photographer behind, you know, in the forum area, in the podium area where people, where video journalists have been for years. He's roped off several rows in the of the pews in the city council, the area where the city council meets, in the audience area, so that people can't sit there. He's stated it's not going to be legal to walk up to the mic and put down a tape recorder there. You have to do it from the side. This whole set of so-called decorum rules is sort of a foreshadowing of what's happened in the actual council meetings. And in the council meetings, he's acted in a very emperor-like way to reward his favorites and punish those he doesn't like. And, of course, I have to admit, I'm one of those he doesn't like. And we're going to see some of this in the tapes ahead. This first tape is January 9th, the council meeting, and you hear the end of Steve Argue's speech, and you hear Fitzmaurice coming in to essentially cut him off, although, indeed, Steve Argue's is at the end of his speech. You'll hear Fitzmaurice interrupting Laura Tucker, and also, we played this on the air before, Laura Tucker tells Tim Fitzmaurice that she didn't like his leaving a message for Becky Johnson, that Johnson's work was an abomination, and Fitzmaurice immediately denies this. And then, of course, a week or two ago, we played the tape that showed that's exactly what he said on the air, abomination. He called Becky Johnson's work as an activist an abomination. And it's not that, you know, he hasn't entitled his opinion in rather pompous kind of language. He has a right to use whatever language he wants. I use pompous language, too. But to lie about it publicly or to conveniently not remember it is, you know, in an attempt to maintain your own reputation, is part of this whole kind of game that's being run on the public around Fitzmaurice. Fitzmaurice likes to give the impression that he's sort of the most humble man in town, or at least on the city council, sort of a sweet poet from UCSC who just is really trying to, you know, green the town out and make, you know, bring on the millennium and get all factions resolved and be a sweet little guy. In fact, he has continued to maintain the sleeping ban. He's essentially in violation of what sounded like campaign promises 2 years ago. He has refused to look into areas for people to sleep in terms of pressing the staff to do that, even though that's been mandated by city council repeatedly. His behavior at city council towards his critics, which, as I said before, is, well, it even has a more malicious edge than former Mayor Sugar's. Sugar is a sort of a, you know, he's a bully, let's face it. He's kind of a, he wants to put you down, he'll go belly to belly with you and toe to toe with you, and that's kind of stupid and kind of macho and kind of type A and all that. And it violates the Brown Act when he cuts you off and so forth. But Fitzmaurice takes a more sort of thoughtful, sinister approach. I mean, Sugar never tried to get a court injunction against us for our protest. In fact, he responded to the protest by trying to put the sleeping ban on the ballot. Fitzmaurice's response was to try to make it illegal for people not just to sleep in their vehicles, but to even be in their vehicles at night. And then at the same time, he called this some kind of a reform because he would have allowed people to sleep outside vehicles. So it would have been legal for you to get out of your vehicle and lie down on the ground outside, a completely preposterous idea. And when we said, let's patch this one up, he just buried the whole thing and wouldn't allow anybody to vote on it at the in the November elections. So that, of course, and Fitzmaurice's behavior around the Dolphin Lee issue, which has been singularly disingenuous. He has been really deceptive on the Dolphin Lee. He talks about democratic process, but his cronies closed down the Democratic Relocation Advisory Committee meeting where the tenants have a majority. He talks about democratic process, but he won't bring back the Lee property, Lee apartment building property, to the open session before it's discussed in private, even though the last we heard at the open session in July, it was no longer going to be discussed and considered, but now they're secretly doing so in closed session. He won't answer the most elementary questions about why not build on vacant property rather than destroy existing housing. Why are you building less units rather than currently exist? Why are you cutting down the relocation money that people were supposed to get, $42,000, now it's down to $5,000 each? I'm supposed to pay for housing for 3 years? I think not. It's all pretty slimy. And I'm afraid that Fitzmaurice bears significant responsibility for this, both as mayor now and as the head of this project in the past. And it's just something that I think really goes to his political judgment at the very least, and one would fear to his character. That, I don't know. That you have to be the judge of. Let's hear a little bit from the City Council. January 9th, oral communications evening session.
One other very important thing Steve I want to take up speaking. Is the fact that the sleeping ban is an issue many, many people care about in the city. The fact that it's still illegal for homeless people to sleep at night. Action needs to be taken on that. Instead, what's happened is Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice has gone after three of the activists who've been demanding a change in the current policy, which makes sleep illegal for the homeless, has gone after them with a restraining order, claiming it's not him. Having five police officers follow Robert Norris down the street to issue this restraining order.
Your time is up.
Okay, let me just finish this sentence. To issue a restraining order, nobody else has police issue restraining orders. You have to hire someone to do it or something like that. Obviously, it's something that's been done by the city to try to silence Robert Norris, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner.
Thanks very much. Next, please.
Hi, my name is Laura Tucker. I'm reading a speech on behalf of Becky Johnson. These are her words and not my words. What kind of religion condemns the poor? I read this speech on behalf of Becky Johnson, who cannot be here today. She was barred from the entire City Hall complex on December 27th. Tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. in Department 7, she may be barred from the whole block for 3 years. Why? Because apparently the mayor can't stand to have a woman with an end the sleeping ban sign sitting peacefully in a public foyer area of his offices. He can't stand to have this council's hypocrisy exposed. This is a council each of whom has promised safe sleeping zones or expanded shelter. Tonight has vicious, wet, cold weather, yet there is nothing on the agenda. This council's response was to go into closed session and ban peaceful petitioners. Mayor Fitzmaurice declared World Religion Day earlier today. What kind of religious beliefs does he have when he upholds the sleeping ban? In late December, Rabbi Chaim Levin wrote our mayor a letter supporting the city council coffee klatch and tag team teach-in folks whose leaders now face misdemeanors and felonies if they come to this meeting. Rabbi Levin wrote Mayor Fitzmaurice, the greatest irony is to see people who claim to be religious actually advocating that we turn our backs on the plight of others.
Excuse me, pardon me, Laura. Would you please stop the conversation in the building while people are at the podium speaking?
Which, of course, is what Mayor Fitzmaurice is doing when he keeps the sleeping ban in place. Make no mistake, he has the votes to change it. He would have to stand up to the bigotry and fears of some businesses. He would have to deal with the dissatisfaction of the police. He would have to show leadership and courage, but he could change it. Instead, along with the bitter cold weather, we have the coldness of the hearts of those on this city council who dismissed this issue. We have the bitterness of your attacks on activists instead of attacking the problem. I urge everyone tomorrow to come to the 8 a.m. press conference at 701 Ocean Street in front of the county courthouse at 8:30 a.m. in Department 7. Be there to support three people the politicians want to shuffle out of sight, along with the homeless people they won't allow to sleep at night. That was from Becky Johnson. And if I have a little bit more time left, I would like to say that I have been pretty much out of the loop of this whole thing, so I don't know what has occurred. But I did hear one thing that enraged me was the sentence that work is a sacred act. I believe that sleep is a sacred act. I'm not saying that work is not a sacred act, but and also to disturb the sacred act of work is an abomination. And I would just like to say that sleep has been, and to cover up with a blanket, has been illegal from 8:30 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. every night, including Christmas and every other religious holiday for the past 23 years, and it disturbs me to see politicians throwing around religious terms like sacred and abomination.
That's not a quote from me, but thank you very much for your comments.
I actually heard that quote from you.
Well, it's not. Next, please. There's another microphone. Well, go ahead. Try that one. We'll see how that works.
so. Is there another mic?
The one down, the one at the table is removable. Is it on?
Yeah, let's do that. My name is Evelyn Schoenfeld. I am reading a speech for Robert Norris. He can't be here tonight because he and two others were barred from this council and this entire block. This council, in its flight from the sleeping van and housing issues, has had Mr. Norris arrested 3 times. He has arrested James Ney and David Silver, who both have lawsuits pending against the city. I say the entire city council, because no one on this council has had the courage or good sense to publicly object when these outrageous arrests happened last year. It began when the former mayor began cutting off Mr. Norris's mic. This was because he didn't like hearing that Latino tenants should be guaranteed return housing before they get kicked out of the building they have. Now we have learned that the number of people in the Dolphin apartments has dropped from 300 to 400 down to 158. What has happened to these missing people? We shed crocodile tears for tenants, but no rent control. We see feel-good gestures for medical marijuana, but the city's attorney threatened lawsuits closes down the biggest club in town, Cannabis Pharmaceuticals. We see the police department get what it wants at pharmaceuticals. We see the police department get what it wants at whatever the cost, but those who demand real police reform ignore whatever the cost, but those who demand real police reforms are ignored and vilified. We see hundreds of homeless people outside tonight on a criminal status, covering up with a simple blanket, as I am doing. Is this still a crime? And Mayor Fitzmaurice will not even put changing this law on the agenda. Come down to court tomorrow at 8 a.m. to support the activists who are keeping these issues alive. I read this. I came out of a sick bed.
Your time is up.
Okay, I'm just finishing my sentence. Because I feel very strongly that the homeless are people too. And I would hope that the new millennium would bring about a new attitude on the part of the homeless. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Mr. Tomasi, did you speak the last time? Why don't you let the folks go first that maybe did not speak the last time?
And that is another example. You heard Mr. Mayor Fitzmaurice telling Michael Tomasi, who's sort of a homeless man who lives in his vehicle and is rather outspoken and, who knows, occasionally sometimes irrationally outspoken, telling him not to speak and telling other people that can go forward. The people that he told to go forward had, in fact, spoken the time before, and he did the same thing at the most recent council meeting, choosing his favorites, who, in fact, are tenants at 204 Riverside, and indeed have important things to talk about. I'm not trying to put down what they're saying, and I'm glad that the city is taking an interest in pressuring the landlord into keeping rents down in that particular complex, though they could have bought the building instead of engaging in this whole Dolphin Lee debacle, but instead they're engaging in subsidies to the tenants and pressures on the landlord. And I mean, that's fine, but it only affects one small group of people. Though I guess it's good that it might send a message out to other landlords elsewhere too, and that's a positive thing. But again, the question is there going to be a fair, even-handed treatment of people at the mic who are trying to use this very small period of time when the public is allowed to make a 3-minute statement at 7 o'clock every other week at the oral communications period? And Fitzmaurice has twice violated the Brown Act, which is an act that provides for equal public participation and not for allowing his favorites to have more time and be chosen first. But in fact, that's what he's done. Which I'm hoping I can add to the Brown Act complaint that I have, that I filed way back in, I filed a series of them in the summer and finally set down a lawsuit with the help of two fine legal activists, Robert and Eleanor. It's sitting in the kind of in the inactive file at the moment, but hopefully it can be added to, and if somebody wants to if we can actually get together a group to support that legally, then that could be pressed forward too, since a lot of these issues are around homeless civil rights. One of the ways they cut back on homeless civil rights is by denying people the opportunity to meaningfully discuss the issues at city council. They want to bury it, and they being the city council, Mayor Sugar last time, Mayor Fitzmaurice this time, with the connivance of the entire council, of course. So we just heard some quotes from the January 9th council meeting. Now I'm going to play you something that happened the next week. The next week was the, if I can find that tape, the next week was the advisory body appointments, and in particular appointments for the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or Review Board as they call themselves. And I talked about this a little bit last week. Each council member appoints one member. This board has been around for 5 years. They've never used their power to have public hearings and to subpoena police officers so they could actually get some real information independent of the police department. They did, after massive pressure from the public, where dozens of people showed up and demanded it, and they did get an independent investigator in the May 22, 1999 Yugoslavia war protest, and where the police essentially fucked up big time, made a false arrest, and wouldn't tell people what they were doing, so people surrounded the van. And then they began physically abusing people around the van, attacking women and children. It was a pretty nasty scene. And then, of course, they charged 5 people with crimes. Steve Argue, after punching Officer David Lefebvre, spent 7 months in jail, even though it's recently been shown Lefebvre used excessive force to begin with against the woman Julianne and her child that Steve Argue was defending, as well as against Steve Argue pepper spraying him down the mouth in a lethal practice that apparently has still not been repudiated by the police department. This is sort of the background. The Police Review Board came up with, it sustained 4 out of 24 complaints, which is not a particularly good record, and it's not such a hot... It tends to show that the chair of the board, Arnie Leff, I've mentioned him earlier in the show, doesn't seem to have the motivation to strengthen the board and take the real action that would establish a real process of the board. He's not held any meetings of the powerful, potentially powerful, City Council Citizens Police Review Board subcommittee that could make legal changes to strengthen the law. He's never held a public hearing on any of the police complaints he's had. He's never held a hearing on pepper spray, though repeatedly been asked to do so. I could go through the whole litany. There's a whole number of things that I presented to the Peace and Freedom Party persuasively that had them initially reject him for endorsing him for city council. I told the Peace and Freedom Party that he was using the CPRB as a stepping stone to head for city council, and that it's not something we should support. Not that everybody else wasn't doing something similar, but with the exception of people like Steve Argue, who I don't think was trying to do a stepping stone. He was trying to get the community organized around issues, and still is. And Bonnie Moore, I think, is another exception to that. Anyway, this Citizens Police Review Board hearing, it was actually the City Council's hearing on reappointments. Instead of having new people appointed, they're going to send back the same tired gang of people. They're going to reappoint Guerrero and King. Guerrero is the old Michael Hernandez appointment, kind of a police department's pal. King is this lawyer who I am told, has many complaints pending before the Bar Association, who helped